Good morning, everyone, and a very warm-hearted welcome. This is Sheva Carr, Director of HeartMath's Heart Mastery Program and founder of Heart Ambassadors, here with Marilyn King of Peace is the Only Goal, the Project of Pathways to Peace. We are so excited to be here with you on day three of our Peace Team Training Camp, day three of our eight-day travels together. This morning we have a very special interview for you that we're going to bring forward in a moment. Good morning, Marilyn. Anything you want to share with our listeners before we dive into our content?
No, just that I'm absolutely delighted at our guests because I was so moved by the interview that I heard that you did with them not that long ago.
We have with us this morning Jim and Maureen Tusty, the filmmakers of the Singing Revolution, an incredible, engaging, it's not even a historical documentary, it's more like an adventure into a new dimension of possibility for humanity right before our very eyes. The SingingRevolution.com is a place where you can actually purchase the DVD and see the film for yourself, and it segues beautifully into the Pathways to Peace vision card, peace point we are choosing to focus on today. Imagine a world where beauty, the arts, and media inspire the best in people. This is the role that Pathways to Peace sees for media in a world based on a culture of peace. And Jim and Maureen, perhaps more than any other filmmakers I've certainly personally met, are contributing to that role of media in powerful and profound ways. And we'll be discussing this with them in a little bit, but as each of you are here to become peace players on the team yourselves, before we hear from Jim and Maureen as peace team players, very effective and accomplished peace team players, we want to come back to you and your heart and your passion, vision, and action for peace. So I invite each of you to take a moment to arrive here by focusing your attention in the area around your heart, to leave behind the things to do for your day. They'll be there for you to pick up 30 minutes from now, to land here in the present moment, to make yourself totally available to this team training camp call by allowing your breath to come evenly and naturally in and out, while you maintain your focus of attention on your heart. And to bring you back to one of the things that training camp does is, and Marilyn, you could probably speak to this better than I, having a coach, having a team training camp allows you some accountability for the true north you're staying with as far as the compass of your gold and your goal. I know when I work with Olympic athletes, part of the support they have in sticking to the discipline of their diets and their training regime are their coaches and their teams. It's hard to get up in the morning at 5 a.m. and do your laps if you ate donuts at midnight. So here we are together, not to shame ourselves or anyone else, but to hold the light of possibility. Did you follow through yesterday? Did you explore your top three passions and create a space for investigating, researching, and informing yourself on them? If you did, what did you discover? Take a moment to give that attention. And if you didn't, what do you need today to step back in the game and do what you missed yesterday? Marilyn, any advice you have from your Olympian thinking and Olympic past for how to follow through?
Well, just so beautifully said, Sheva, that from the, you know, athletic or Olympic vantage point, beginning your day the Olympian way, you are reminded. You remind yourself quite naturally. It happens not because anyone trained you to necessarily, but you awaken with that which is most important to you. I could be in the Olympics or 8 gold medals or living in a world at peace. And then what we call a review preview. You look at, so how did I do yesterday? We keep a training log. And you look at, you know, what worked and what didn't work, and then you do a preview.
And Marilyn, my preview for you in this moment is if we can up the volume, that would be great. You're coming in just a little quiet.
Thank you for reminding me. So it's just so beautifully said and matches so beautifully my experience and understanding of, you know, how Olympians and high-performing athletes begin their day the Olympian way. And not only reminding yourself and becoming conscious of that which is most important to you, whatever your goal is, but you also keep a log and do a review of the day before and a preview of the upcoming day, holding the focus that you have about what is most important today, what is the thing that I have decided will be most effective and most important for me to do. So beautifully said, the same thing in your words, Sheva.
Thank you, Marilyn. So in this review of how yesterday went, knowing part of reaching any goal is refining what we did yesterday, and that's part of the thrill of the growth of ever improving on yesterday and what we can do today. And in reviewing yesterday, one of the things that we spoke about was your, or perhaps this was in the interview as well with Gita, what's your peace diet? What do you allow in? How do you relate to, in particular, given today's preview theme, the media? We talked about how giving morose attention to the evening news and just complaining about it is a drain on energy and doesn't help us move toward our collective peace goal. And so we also determine what gets put out in the media. Having worked extensively in media, as that is one of my pathways to peace, I was part of an initiative many years ago with Nokia and Fred Fuchs, who was at the time just retired from working with Francis Ford Coppola at Zoetrope Films, and they wanted to create a good news network. But they couldn't do it. And the reason they couldn't do it is because what drives media is advertising, and what drives advertising are human eyeballs and attention, human ears. And in the market research they did, no one wanted to pay attention to good news. We can be the difference there through what we choose. We can change the tide of that by what we choose to give our attention to. All of you who've shown up on this call, 200 of us now in Facebook and more who come to the calls and download them, we're giving attention to peace. Thank you for making that choice. Marilyn, something you want to share with us about how this relates to the vision and being informed aspect of passion, vision, action?
Yeah, it's always just remarkable to me that there's a distinction that I hold. The United Nations Department of Public Information has declared that this International Day of Peace's theme is education. And what does it mean? It brings the questions up of what does it mean to be well-informed? And my perspective is that, particularly here in the United States, that people are really well-informed about the problems and the issues and the challenges and the things that, feel, threatening to us. But we are not fully informed. It's almost like we're looking through a little tiny pinhole at the issues. But when you take that away and look at the larger perspective around the status of peace, the presence of peace, of cooperation, of collaboration, and the progress that's being made in all of the different areas, and many of which represented on our peace card, that we're not fully informed. And we are just in a barrage of information and really well informed about the problems.
And sometimes inaccurately so.
Yes.
A short story that I want to tell here, and then this is a beautiful segue for us to bring in our guests who have dedicated years of their lives and their life resources to informing us about the other side of the story. When I lived in Nicaragua as a teenager during the Contra Revolution, which was CIA-backed from the United States, I was devastated to discover, as I was in Managua during what were the elections of the Sandinistas at the time, that I was standing outside the Intercontinental Hotel and went in to get some water, and there at the bar in the Intercontinental Hotel were press from the various news agencies in the United States. This was actually predated fax machines. And so they were receiving via something called at the time a ticker tape, which I don't even know what it was, directions from the State Department in the U.S. as to what they should report on the ground outside. And they were boasting about this at the bar. None of them were on the ground reporting what was actually happening. In fact, what they reported was the opposite. As an 18-year-old, this was one of the most disillusioning experiences I'd had, and I refused actually to look at any news media for 10 years after that because I didn't believe any of it. There's a wonderful film, and this brings us into the role that media can play in more fully informing us, and we can talk more about this as we go, called The Threat of a Good Example, that was made about exactly this issue in Nicaragua, that talked about if a small country like Nicaragua could, independent of large corporate interests, be thriving and successful for its people, that was very threatening to the superpowers of the world, and they needed to report it differently. So this issue, with the role of the internet and the very thing that's brought this group together, Facebook, is revolutionized now in the world where media and truth-telling is accessible both through us as individuals and to us as a collective. We don't need to rely on what someone else tells us to be informed. And that being said, Jim and Maureen, I'd love to bring you forward to share with us how Estonia handled their peaceful revolution and how you came to tell a story that is undertold until your film.
Well, I guess I'll start. It is a pretty amazing story, and one thing I'm going to build on that you were talking about, Sheva, is let me just share with the audience, essentially, the Singing Revolution is about the story of David beating Goliath without even using a slingshot. This tiny country of Estonia played a significant role in the collapse of the Soviet Union, it's little known, and it was entirely methodical and strategic and nonviolent. But Maureen and I are often asked, the film played in cinema art theaters, and the audience is, generally speaking, are reasonably well-informed, depending upon how you want to define well-informed, but they like to keep up with current events and news. And we often get asked, how come I didn't hear about this? And we've come up with three answers, one of which touches on one of your points, Sheva. And the three answers are, first of all, Estonia is such a small country. When is the last time you heard anything about Estonia? Number two, Estonians by nature are very self-effacing. It's a culture that dislikes bragging more than any culture I've been to, and Marie and I have had the good fortune of filming in, I don't know, 40 or 50 countries. And the Estonians, just, you're not going to find them bragging. They just don't do it. So they weren't about to go out and say, look at this wonderful thing we did. But the third reason is very relevant to this conversation, is that had 50 people been shot, I think it would have been covered as news. But because it was nonviolent, because it took place over 4 years, because it was not one big dramatic splash event, it was deemed not newsworthy. And myself, I'm not educated enough about the media to cast blame on anyone here. But I just say as a culture, we have to look at that and say the media is so oriented towards finding those flash events. It amazes me sometimes how the focus of news can change day to day. From one big overwhelming topic to a different one the next day to a different one the day after. It's so material in some ways. So I'll pause for breath and let Maureen weigh in on this in terms of Estonia and what happened there. Do you want to perhaps, Maureen, share with the audience the nature of the story?
The nature of the protests, after 50 years of occupation from the Soviet Union, Gorbachev came in and a slightly looser policy on public speech came in. And the Estonians very consciously saw that as an opportunity. And they instantly...
Uh-oh, Maureen, we lost your last sentence, if you could share that again.
Sure. The Estonians took this opportunity of some of Glasnost coming in and the opening up that Gorbachev brought into the Soviet Union, and it was absolutely not his intent for it to have this effect, but the Estonians took that as an incredible opportunity to start talking about what was going on in their country, start talking about their history and their past and the fact that they were Estonians and not truly part of the Soviet Union. So they still had to be very careful how they did this, but one of the main strategies they had was to use their culture of music. And they have a very profound musical culture, both folk music and instrumental music. So they used music as part of their protest to come together, and it had such a snowball effect that a rock concert in one instance, the town square was filled. It started, more people came, the authorities tried to shut them down, so all of the people went to a festival field 3 kilometers away, and suddenly they had 100,000 Estonians there singing illegal Estonian traditional songs and new songs that were emerging, being written in Estonian, which was illegal, these protest songs. So they used these peaceful outlets very intentionally, but at the same time, there was a momentum that built that went even beyond what they realized it could have and the power it could have. So this built over 4 years, and I think it's a challenge when there's a process that happens over time. How do you report on that? How do you tell that and share it? But the Estonians, were very, very careful and strategic in how they did it, but they were also very, very conscious that they had to stay nonviolent. They could not give the authorities an excuse to crack down on them. So I think the reason they were able to get so many people on board and so many people in that consciousness that as a culture, it was passed down from parent to children that we have to remain nonviolent. That is, you know, how we will ultimately be successful and how we will ultimately, you know, be able to live as Estonians again.
And if I may, I would like to just share with the audience, because some may not be aware of the scope of the occupation and what happened. Estonia was occupied by Joseph Stalin, followed by Adolf Hitler, followed by Joseph Stalin during World War II. They lost 25% of their population in 6 years. It was a massively harmful, destructive, violent occupation. And the Soviets had one soldier for every 12 Estonian citizens. If you carry that math for in the United States, that would mean we would be occupied by a 25-million-person army to have the same ratio of soldiers to citizens. The reason I bring all this up is it just makes all the more extraordinary the peaceful path they chose in the 1980s. And despite the fact that virtually every person who was singing those illegal songs in the field had a grandparent or a great-grandparent or a parent imprisoned or tortured or captured or jailed or in some ways oppressed by the Soviets. So to me, Estonian history is so little known. I want to make sure the audience understands the depth of the severity of the occupation.
I want to highlight, and thank you so much, Jim and Maureen, for this incredible soundbite of an incredible event in history that even a a two-hour documentary is hard to give it justice, and yet you've done that, and you've truly captured media as a pathway to peace in doing so by presenting us with the best in humanity. I want to bring forward the role that music had, because it's the second or third time, Marilyn, that music is showing up as a peace agent. Isn't that interesting in our calls?
Yes, and I'm also wanting, James, if you don't mind, just sharing briefly the other piece that I found so moving in the previous interview. If you just say a moment about, there was a quote from a gentleman who said something about, you know, their singing past and that they had been fine for some significant, I don't know whether it was, you know, hundreds or thousands of years. And then the challenge of this period of time that was just so destructive, and that we're going to be fine again. And do you know what I'm referring to here in terms of the history of the Estonian people?
I'm not sure precisely, but...
Jim, I remember that moment when you and I were dialoguing, in which you said something about, you know, the Estonian culture and the historical context of their folk songs goes back thousands of years, and their language does too. So 800 years of occupation was just a radar in their time.
Yes,
does that jar your memory?
Yes, it totally jarred it. Yes. Well, Estonia is anthropologists consider Estonia one of the longest continuously occupied lands in the world. That is to say, the people, the ethnic Estonians who live there now, they can trace them back to the end of the last ice age 10,000 years ago. So the Estonians have been sitting on their land for a long period of time. And music goes back thousands of years at least, as far as it's been recorded. And Estonia, a country of 1.4 million people, has one of the largest collections of folk songs in the world, and is known by musicologists as a singing culture. There are stories that when Peter the Great invaded Estonia in the 1700s, that the people protested him with music as well. So this is not a new idea for the Estonians. And in fact, they had this singing tradition that in 1869 sort of culminated in developing the Song Festival that goes on to this day, where they get as many as 30,000 singers on stage at the same time to sing both traditional songs as well as new songs that are written. They're not locked into the past. By the way, as an aside, to me, that's one of the more interesting things about the singing revolution, which really technically were about 7 specific songs that were written in the 1980s. So you have this culture that has a tradition of thousands of year-old songs, and yet when it came time to fight Gorbachev and the Soviet Union, they decided to write new music. A new generation would write new music in the 1980s to protest it. So singing is just inherent in the Estonian culture. It's embedded in, I should say. I recently learned that Estonian children learn music notes and how to read music at the same time they learn their alphabet. So as they're learning the ABCDs, they're also learning their G class and F class. So music is just an inherent part of the culture. It was a natural way for them to protest. Now, Maureen has shared a theory with me that I embrace, which is that part of the reason the Estonians could stay nonviolent, given the extremely violent oppression they had suffered under, was because the singing, perhaps, was cathartic. Mm. I really embrace that philosophy, that thinking, that the singing allowed people to sort of release the negative energy and stay positive and stay nonviolent under many situations where, I dare say, you thought violence was going to break out, but it just never happened. So, Marilyn, I don't know if that...
Yes.
What the stuff you were talking about.
And the way James described that, Sheva, I think, you know, it speaks, you know, so beautifully to the heart coherence that I'm sure that some of the singing they did, you know, engendered and brought them back to that kind of energetic place that came from their deep history and bringing that forth in the moment in some of the music, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I think there's no question about that. And so music, as we can hear and have heard in multiple interviews now, is a true pathway to peace. Again, it might not be yours, but this is perhaps, as our time goes so quickly on these calls, a good moment for us to bring everyone back to their own introspection as your preview for your day and living this day the Olympian way in your gold as peace, to pay attention to what is it that's cathartic for your emotions. As Jim described, how singing helped the Estonian people discharge their oppression so they could respond to it rather than react, is the language I would give it. And in that, peacefully take their country back. And the story itself and seeing that unfold is amazing. So film, to me, is an incredible pathway to peace, one that I find cathartic. What things do that for you? And where have you seen beauty, the arts, and media inspire and reflect the best in people? I want to invite each person on this call to identify at least three places where you see and have already seen beauty, the arts, and media inspire and reflect the best in people. And write those down. As you write those down, I invite you to consider how those inspirations for you might be clues to your top three passions that you want to give vision and action to as your pathway to peace. And this actually gives us a moment to just come back to the first peace point on the peace vision card we discussed on our launch day, where governments respect the human rights of all their citizens and settle disputes by the rule of law for the common good. Maureen and Jim, one of the things that deeply touched me in the film was not just how Estonians reclaimed their country through song, but how they then responded to the occupiers living there with them once the country was their own again. It seems to me their response embodies this pathway of peace, of governing, and I wonder if you could share a little bit about that with us.
Well, a Norwegian friend said to me once, do you think that the Nazi soldiers who occupied Norway during World War II got to keep the home they occupied at the end of the war? Did they get to vote in the 1946 Norwegian election? And of course, it's a ludicrous question. No, they didn't. They were thrown out. And the Estonian said to me, we had the same situation, except it was a 50-year occupation instead of a 3 or 4-year occupation. Because after all, of the hundreds of thousands of Russian people who were brought into Estonia, a large percentage of them were the occupying soldiers, were the KGB agents, with the policemen, and on some rare occasions, the torturers. So what do we do with these people? And it was certainly a matter of great debate within the Estonian people, and I was not present for it, but as it's been described to me after the fact, some people did feel we should kick them all out, get them out of here. Some people felt anyone who wore a uniform should be put in jail. But what prevailed ultimately was the following philosophy, which I find fascinating. Again, the analogy with Norway. Did Norway have to rewrite its constitution at the end of World War II? No, they just went back to what the constitution was before Hitler came in. So similarly, the Estonians decided we effectively should go back to our constitution of 1939 as it existed before Stalin came in and took us over. And the implications for that are profound. They decided that meant anything that happened during the occupation from 1940 until 1991, independence, was inherently illegal under international law. So let's start with the citizenship issue. Any people who came into the country between 1940 and 1991 was not deemed a citizen because they came during an illegal period. Anyone who was in the country prior to 1939 was a citizen. But they took it further than that. They decided, okay, you're not a citizen, but we're not going to kick you out of the country. You can stay. They essentially became landed immigrants. You can get a job here. You can work here. You can live here. You can stay here indefinitely the rest of your life. However, if you want to vote, you can even do that. And all we ask is two things. If you were living here in 1991 when independence happened, you have to pass the language test and the history test, which I dare say every country in the world requires for its new citizens. The challenge for that is virtually no Russian ethnics learn the Estonian language, and they had a very different view of history. They were taught a very different view of history, I should say. So the Estonians felt that Stalin was a second occupier after Hitler. The way that Russian children were taught history was Stalin liberated Estonia from Hitler, which is a ludicrous concept, and but I won't go into that right now. So one other interesting twist is then they had to decide what to do with the homes that were occupied by the KGB and the army in 1939. So if some officer comes in and many people were just thrown out of their home and the homes were then taken over by some Soviet soldier or general, well, now 50 years later, you may have the grandchild of that general inhabiting the house who inherited it and who arguably has committed no crime. So what the Estonians decided to do in that case was, okay, anyone who owned a home in 1939 that was seized, it is their home, they get that home back. But those who are living there now, if they are not guilty of any crime, which most ethnic Russians were not, if you are not guilty of any crime, we will give you government scrip equal to the value of the home. So you can buy any other home in this country of equal value, but you just cannot stay in this home because this home was illegally taken in 1939. Mm-hmm. So a rather long answer, Sheva, and I apologize for that, but I'm sure you'll agree it's a complex topic. It's hard to explain, but the Estonian people, I think, handled that situation very remarkably, given that so many of the ethnic Russians in their country were soldiers and occupiers and policemen.
Right, and precisely because it's complex, so I appreciate all the attention you gave it, Jim, it's not the sort of thing that bodes well in a soundbite on the evening news.
Yes.
No,
and so
not
it's
at all.
Not told. But it is an example of the living peace in the world where governments are settling disputes in a way that honors the common good. It is happening. And the more we give our attention to these incredible positive possibilities, and not just possibilities, but actualities, as Marilyn keeps reminding me. Thank you, Marilyn.
Mm. Yes.
And we make them more real in the world, and they become a part of our peace possibility.
Yes. I call this our peace, not history, but peace herstory. And I've been fortunate to be able to see and avail myself of stories of, you know, people in the Philippines and people in countries all over the world who have perhaps not quite as dramatic as this in some ways, but just really very inspiring stories about the herstory of how people have chosen peace in so many just elegant ways. And thank you so much, James and Maureen, for documenting this piece of peace herstory.
We will definitely be putting the Singing Revolution website up in our Facebook page, so you can find it there. Jim and Maureen, something Marilyn and I were discussing this morning before our call with you is the fact that so many North Americans and certain parts of Europe, people are resigned about peace. They don't even think it's possible. And yet you're describing to us a culture in which not only were the Estonians very clear that nonviolence was the only way they could attain their goal, but they were also strategic about it over generations.
You know,
can you tell us, give us a window as we're coming to the completion of this call into the Estonian mindset and how that might transform and inform the way that we think about peace?
Sheva, I think the greatest example or lesson we can take away from the Estonian culture, and this is one of those things where it's not necessarily documented and studied, but from our experience, undeniably, peacefulness and nonviolent resolution to conflict and problems can be a cultural value. And we've seen this again and again throughout Estonian history and throughout dialogue with Estonians and how they approach issues and problem solving, that it's part of their culture. It's what they value in being an Estonian and being a person and a citizen in the world. And so for me, the example is not just when a mass of people come together, they can keep their emotions in check. They can, you know, find other outlets for their negative emotions through music, but also just in their day-to-day culture. I think what has evolved in Estonia is that of intellectual, intelligent resolution to conflict is very valued in their culture. And I think a culture can learn that. And to me, that's a very uplifting and heartening lesson to feel from Estonia, that people can learn this and it can become valued by an entire culture.
So beautiful, Maureen. And of course, you and Jim have created a film that actually shows that happening. Teenagers from Oakland, California, which has a very high crime rate, by the way. Marilyn, you've done work inside the inner city Oakland schools with your Olympian thinking. There's a film that Jim and Maureen just have launched about these teenagers from Oakland in a choral group going to sing in the Estonian festival and discovering what it's like not to compete to be the best, but to become one. Breath, the name of the film, to breathe as one. I don't know, that film, I believe, is not available yet on DVD. Is that right? You have your theatrical release first?
Yes. The DVD for that will probably come out in the fall, but it's not available right now. And then it will go on public television in the winter.
Wonderful. So we'll post information about that on the Facebook page as well. But you just gave us such a beautiful thumbnail of the fact that the culture of peace is learnable. We can learn not only that it's possible, but the pathways to create it together. And Jim and Maureen, I thank you so much, and Marilyn too, for being role models and putting messaging and media and art out there that helps us anchor the vision, cornerstone of passion, vision, action for peace building around the world. Marilyn, anything you want to add before we give our listeners their home play? And I also want to mention to people an opportunity you'll have to travel to Estonia if you want to immerse yourself in a culture of peace at their Song Festival in 2014. But before we talk about that, Marilyn, anything else you want to add?
Well, just a phrase that, you know, is so prevalent, that, you know, from Avon and Pathways to Peace. They say, may peace prevail on earth. What came up for me was how important it is for us to be fully informed and recognize that peace prevails in many places on earth and has throughout centuries and generations. And this is an example of people for whom it was true for many generations. Chose to make that through extremely challenging times and back staying focused on who they knew themselves to be. So just like one wakes up and thinks, you know, no matter what I'm doing today, I'm going to do this, you know, as an Olympian, and as an Olympian would do it. This is the example that the Estonian people, in my mind, brought to us, that they knew who themselves, who they knew, I don't know how to say, themselves to be, and that prevailed through the challenging times and into the example that they are now for us. So thank you so much again, James and Maureen.
So, thank you.
Anyone who would like an opportunity to immerse yourself in the Estonian culture and hear more than 30,000 people all singing together, breathing as one, I am taking a group to Estonia in July of 2014 to participate in the Song Festival. My husband is here, just heard me say that, and he's applauding. He's excited. He's going to come. So we'll be teaching heart math together, the heart coherence techniques. And I don't know, Marilyn, maybe you'll be joining us in Estonia, and we'll be doing Olympian thinking at the same time. If you're interested in that trip, you can definitely reach out to us on the Facebook page, or you can write to me at Sheva, S-H-E-V-A, at heartambassadors.com. But right now what we want to do, beginning our day the Olympian way, is the preview of this day, the training schedule for the day. And given the content of today, I want to invite each one of you to pay attention to the media that you give your attention to. The first step in being well-informed is recognizing that you don't have the whole picture. In HeartMath language, we call this neutrality. Understanding that the news media that you are exposed to is distorted and skewed, it doesn't mean that it's all false, but it isn't the whole story. it's sensationalized based on what people will pay attention to that will pay for advertising. So we can get to neutral physiologically by focusing attention in the area around the heart, allowing the breath to come in through the heart and out through the heart evenly. Even breathing is key because it balances the nervous system. And the addiction to stimulating news comes from the trigger it offers the autonomic nervous system. Anyone interested in more about that can go to heartmastery.com. So by balancing our inner system, taking out the drama and our addiction to it, we position ourselves from a place of openness, acknowledging there's more that we don't know that we don't know than what we do know. And that opens a spirit of curiosity and the adventure of becoming more informed, as Marilyn has been inviting us to do. So today I invite you to be neutral with the information and media that you take in, and to seek out today art, media, and beauty that inspires the best in you as a human being and reflects the best in our humanity. And I encourage you to post what you find on the Facebook page so that we can share with one another the discoveries we're making and broadcast the Good News Network among ourselves and into the world. Marilyn, Jim, Maureen, any final comments from the three of you before we open the lines?
No, I'm fine.
I was just noting this morning that something I read, they talked about the internet being our global mailbox. So we can send anything to anyone, anywhere through our global mailbox, and let us share beauty, the arts, and the media that brings out the best in people.
Yes, and Jim and Maureen, thank you so much for creating that. I'm going to take the call off of lecture mode. Does anyone have a comment or a question for our guest speakers today?
Hey, Shem, it's Michael.
Good morning, Michael.
I was just trying to remember what the capital of Estonia is.
Tallinn.
Oh, okay.
Tallinn, yes.
And Jim, you know, one of the things that really came through for me with your story you were telling about was the value of justice and how important justice is to peace. And that really came through. I could see with my heart that the value that justice was very, very important to bring to that to what had happened in the past. And thanks for sharing that. That's great.
No, our pleasure. Thanks for listening. But what it makes me think of is part of the Estonian path also is very strategic and intentional. And let me elaborate. They were not simply nonviolent. To simply be nonviolent would mean if the soldiers punch you, you don't hit back. The Estonians had a goal. They knew they wanted to be independent and free. They were not simply being nonviolent for its own sake. And the strategy more or less played out like this. They would advance one inch, one tiny inch. That is to say, they would break a law in some very, very minor way. And it put the authorities in a very difficult position. Because either they arrested them and they looked very authoritarian and very bad, or they didn't arrest them and the Estonians got away with breaking the law. And then the next day they'd move another inch, and the third day another inch. And over 4 years, they're suddenly ahead a couple of miles. So I guess all I want to add to the picture is it was not simply being nonviolent. It was also having a clear goal and being intentional and strategic in how you get there. And that's what I so admire about the Singing Revolution.
I think there's a lot of overlap with the Olympian way and the Estonian approach, it sounds like.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. Anyone else have a comment or a question for Maureen and Jim? I love it when you guys make your comments because it like turns the tap on Jim and Maureen and more good stuff comes out.
This is Terry. I have a comment.
Good morning, Terry.
I loved the Peace Prevails, and I immediately zinged into me that I'm a peace permeator. That's my comment.
I want that T-shirt.
Okay.
Beautiful. Thank you, Terry. Anyone else?
Oh, this is Diane, and I'm a singer, so I was very inspired by this morning's call, and I often put my singing on the bottom of the list every day and do that if I think I have time. But it's going to go closer to the top, if not the top of the list.
Excellent. And?
Yeah. Value it more, way more.
Unfortunately, I'm needing to mute some of you that just have so much background noise. I also see that we have the Pathways to Peace founder, Avon Madison, with us this morning. Avon, would you be willing to say a couple of words?
Well, I'm just in a deep listening and appreciative mode to what the four of you are offering. And Jim and Lorene, I had the great privilege of seeing the Singing Revolution on PBS and told everyone that I knew that this was an example of one of the most evident, giving great evidence of a pathway to peace and the emergence of a culture of peace. And you were, in your descriptor this morning, these diverse pathways to peace are actually all interconnected. So what your beautiful documentary has seeded and hopefully will seed in the culture of North America very deeply, and particularly in this country of the United States of America and North America, is the fact that when a core part of a culture, which is folk singing and folk music, which has been a strand within the United States of America, and when that heart-centered communication returns and is more prevalent in that manner, it also leads to and connects with the first pathway, which is that peace through good governance includes peace through justice, peace through right relationship with all peoples and all our relations, and media being the most informative, instantaneous way that culture is transmitted. I thank you both for your dedication to telling the stories that no one else has told, that seed the field of consciousness within humanity and give evidence that a culture of peace is in fact emerging. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Avon, and your presence here is reminding me to return to something, Marilyn, that you mentioned, but that is such common vocabulary for you and I, we forgot to tell people what it really is. And you had spoken about how this International Day of Peace, the focus and theme is education. The International Day of Peace was something that was birthed by Avon Madison and those at Pathways to Peace in collaboration with the United Nations. And Avon, please correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong. But it is every year on September 21st. So part of our inspiration, Marilyn and I, in offering you this now, the 8-day Peace Team Training Camp, is actually in preparation for the International Day of Peace. And we'll share more about that in the days ahead. Marilyn, anything you want to add to that?
No, just that was thank you for that, Avon, for that, Sheva.
So you can all be starting to align your passion, vision into what might be an action you could give birth to on the International Day of Peace. Each one of us becoming a nexus point of creators of a focal point of attention on peace on that day, and we'll talk about how that can be valuable on a global scale in some of the calls to come. I want to honor everyone's time here on the call. Is there anything else our audience wants to share or ask before we sign off this morning? And I can already feel the questions coming. Where are the recordings? Where are the recordings? On the Facebook page, under files. Very unfortunately, they will not inspire you with their beauty, but hopefully with their content. You will find simple Word documents for each call we've had with a very long link to Free Conference Call HD, where you can plug that into your web browser and be able to play the call back through your computer that way. And you can also download the call through that link and have it in your iPad or your iPhone or another MP3 player. And please feel free to forward those links and documents to whomever you would wish to share this content with. So any other questions or anything anyone wants to share before we sign off until day 4 tomorrow of our Peace Team training camp? Silence is its own beautiful sharing. Let's just observe the peace in the silence of this moment. Thank you all for giving your attention to peace. And Jim and Maureen, Avon and Marilyn, if you would hang tight with us, we can segue into our meeting. Much love, everyone. Talk with you tomorrow morning.
Thank you.